suddenly tugged back the white fog, like a curtain across a huge window, revealing the shore. There were the jumbled rocks, and Trader and Abe, standing side by side, facing away from the ocean. Surrounding them was a menacing circle of men, looking, as far as Ryan could make out, like a mix of brushwood survivors and some capering scabbies. And at the front, leading them, was the unmistakable figure of Straub. There wasn't a thing to be done. The raft grounded near the entrance to the redoubt.
No, traitor. Nothing is forever.
Deathlands Shadowfall is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, James Axler. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, Jeff Baker, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Michael Replogle, James Lewis, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Temeskin Wubna. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Nathaniel Perry, Temeskin Wubna, Dan Smith, and Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Gerald Rudolph. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders. Available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for the next episode of Mark Dalton, Owner Operator. Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator by Ido Van Belkom. Copyright 2007, Ido Van Belkom. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode 8, Drivers of the Purple Rage.
When Bud gave Mark Dalton his choice of Lowe's, he decided on the one headed for the East Coast. Even though it was one of the biggest ports on the east coast of North America, Halifax was one of the few parts of the country he'd never been to. Given the choice between a reefer of beef headed for Montreal, a flatbed laden with machine equipment bound for Sudbury that would have to be buttoned down every 100 kilometers, and a van trailer full of plastic pool toys made in China and destined for Halifax, the decision was an easy one to make. The lighter cargo would be easier on motherload, and since it wasn't due into the warehouse in Halifax for 3 days, he could take his time with it. Hopefully, the trip would be an uneventful one, which would be a welcome change after the events of the past few months. On his last trip to the West Coast and back, he'd helped a fellow trucker get untangled from a bunch of smugglers, got caught up in an insurance scam, got ripped off on some routine truck repairs, almost got killed working on a movie set, helped a friend keep his rig, and spent 2 hellish days as a dispatcher. That would have been enough excitement to last a lifetime for most truckers, but Mark seemed to have a talent for finding trouble. Or perhaps trouble had a way of finding its way to him, sort of like an old dog always being able to find its master. Whatever the reason for it, Mark was looking forward to a leisurely drive to the coast, maybe a day on the beach in Lawrencetown trying out a surfboard, and then a load out of the port heading west. The future looked comfortable. Peaceful. Just then, an older model Chrysler New Yorker cut in front of him, trying to squeeze into the lane to get around a Suburban pulling a trailer in the left-hand lane. Mark had to jam on the brakes to avoid hitting the Chrysler, and the light load gave the trailer's tires no real grip on the asphalt. The rear wheels locked up and his rig hardly slowed at all.
Shit, shit, shit.
Mark turned the wheel right to keep his front bumper from being clipped by the speeding car. The right front tire of his Peterbilt caught the shoulder and he started sliding to the right over the gravel and dirt on the side of the highway. The Chrysler straightened out, sped past the Suburban, and turned back into the passing lane, causing the driver of that vehicle to slam on his brakes and veer into the lane in front of Mark. Again, Mark had to turn the wheel sharply to avoid a collision. Behind him, the trailer swung wildly out across the highway, and then mercifully straightened out.
Crazy son of a bitch!
By now, Mark was traveling slowly, and all the other vehicles around him were traveling less than 70. He downshifted a few times to find the right gear, then began the long, slow climb back up the gears to get his rig back up to speed. The Chrysler was about a half a kilometer up the highway, driving slightly slower now since it didn't have to weave and swerve through traffic. As Mark passed the Suburban, he could see the driver wiping his brow with a handkerchief, and the woman in the passenger seat jawing a blue streak as she pointed an accusatory finger at the Chrysler down the road. Mark was angry at the driver, too. After all, he could have killed somebody.
Well, you're not going to get away with that, sonny.
He was up past 110 now, and he could probably get it up to 120 and cruise along at that speed for hours. Even if he didn't catch up to the Chrysler, he might be able to stay behind it, looming large in his mirrors so the driver would know that what he'd done was not only wrong, but downright dangerous. As the speedometer flirted with 120, the blue and white welcome sign for Kingston zoomed past on Mark's right. At this rate, he'd be through Brockville and Cornwall in just a few hours, and would likely reach Halifax much earlier than expected. More importantly, he was getting closer to the bastard in the Chrysler. Another few kilometers and he'd be on him, right up his rear end, giving him a little taste of his own medicine. Outside of Brockville, Mark had managed to pull directly behind the Chrysler. When he got up close to the 10-year-old burgundy sedan, he was able to read the vanity plate below the trunk lid. Big SHT. Mark wondered what was supposed to go between the H and the T. It was either an O or an I. The driver probably thought O, but Mark was convinced it was I. When the front of his Peterbilt was just a few feet from the rear bumper of the Chrysler, Mark let the driver have a blast from his horn. The sound must have startled the driver because the Buick suddenly swerved like a snake slithering down the road.
How do you like that?
The driver of the Chrysler rolled down his window and gave Mark the bird. Mark saw the man's middle finger waving in the air and tightened his grip on the steering wheel until his knuckles turned white. He could feel his face getting hot and red, and his body was a tightly packed ball of rage and in danger of exploding. The driver pulled over as if to let Mark by, but Mark wasn't having any of it. He pulled into the right-hand lane behind the car and kept his foot down hard on the accelerator. The driver was obviously tired of the high-speed chase and moved left to let Mark by.
You're not getting off that easy, asswipe.
Again, Mark pulled behind him, pushing the guy along with his huge rig, forcing him to keep up the pace, even if he had enough of playing cat and mouse. The driver moved into the right-hand lane again, but this time he tried slowing down so that he could get behind Mark and hopefully be done with it. But Mark wouldn't let him. He began inching over to the right, cutting off the lane and leaving the other driver with no place to go. The driver was forced onto the shoulder, just like Mark had been forced to do an hour earlier. Dirt, gravel, and dust rose up in a plume behind the car, and the driver had to struggle to keep the swerving car under control.
Yeah, how's that for you, buddy?
And then the car jammed on its brakes and began skidding to a stop. It was gone from the lane and had fallen far behind Mark's rig. Mark reveled in his victory. He'd shown that guy in the Chrysler a thing or two, and he doubted if he'd go speeding down the 401 again anytime soon. He raised the middle finger of his right hand, knowing full well the driver would never see it.
I'm number one, pal.
Just then, Mark saw a minivan in the lane ahead of him. He was still moving as quickly as his rig could go, and the minivan was cruising along, probably just under the speed limit. Mark took his foot off the accelerator and started downshifting, but it wasn't going to be enough. He jammed on the brakes and struggled to keep the front of his Peterbilt from slamming into the back of the tiny vehicle in front of him. The back tires cried out in pain and torment as they tried to get a grip on the highway, and the trailer began to slide out to the left, sweeping across the passing lane like an arm clearing off a tabletop. There was another car in the lane, a tiny Geo Metro that would probably be destroyed if it came into even the slightest contact with the trailer. And suddenly it was over. The trailer straightened out, the wheels unlocked, and he was rumbling along at 95. There were kids in the back of the minivan. They waved to him. Mark waved back. There was a young girl riding in the Metro. She was talking to the young guy behind the wheel, a boyfriend or fiancé, as if she didn't have a clue about how close he'd just been to being killed. Killed by a maniac road rager named Mark Dalton. How many times had he read about road rage and felt he was too much of a professional to ever become caught up in the heat of the moment? How many times had he shook his head after reading about some bizarre account of some experienced driver losing it out on the highway?